The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another hot stove edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Going to be getting into a lot of starting pitching talk. That market is far from unsettled. Red Sox need to make probably one more move. No guarantees if it happens or not. We're going to have some Tristan Casas talk. Maybe some Devers talk that won't die from him moving off of third. That's probably not going to happen, but we could dive into that as well. I am Terry Cushman, joined tonight by Jeremy Schilling, Nick Diamond. How are you, gentlemen?
I'm doing
all right, Terry.
All right. Not a lot going on. We made a big move, probably the biggest move we've made in the last several years. Last week, it was nice to see, but it didn't seem to cause any other dominoes to fall just yet, at least within the organization. So I guess diving right into it, I'm wondering, like, are we starting to get impatient again with Breslow? Like, I just thought more like other stuff would begin to happen. Last year, for instance, you signed Giolito, and then a day or two later, the Chris Sale trade happens. We get Vaughn Grissom. It was a well-received trade at the time, and it seemed like we were off and running. Now, I just feel like we're back in limbo a little bit.
I'm less on edge because of the Crochet trade, which I liked, by the way. For me, that was Teal for Crochet, and I'm a huge fan of the known commodity. Immediately jumps to the start of the rotation. So that has stemmed the tide for me a little bit. As of right now, our starting five is expected to be Crochet, Giolito, Hauk, Crawford, Bayo. I think we're better going into 2025 than we were in 2024. With that said, if they're, and I don't think they are, if they're resting on their laurels in any way, it's a problem because there's still issues across this roster, which I'm sure we're going to talk about. But them going out and getting the lefty starter took some heat off, at least from me.
Yeah, I agree. Going out and getting Crochet takes a little bit of heat off of. I still want more moves, and I think there will be another pitching move. I just don't think it will be a Corbin Burns type of pitching move. I don't think they'll go out and spend $250 million on a pitcher, but I do think they will make some other move. I think they're just kind of waiting right now to see if Burns's price comes down, because I don't think they're going to pay him top dollar. I mean, if he falls in the Red Sox laps, wonderful, but I don't think that's what they're going to do. But yeah, I don't know if I'm disappointed in Breslow, because no one else has done anything. He traded for the catcher as soon as he traded Kyle Teal. So that was kind of replenishing Kyle Teal. So he did that, but I still want more pitching moves, obviously.
I just look at this rotation and I'm skeptical whether Hauk can be quite as effective this coming year as he was last year. I don't think it's out of the realm, but I mean, he was really good last year. And so, you know, it would be huge if he could kind of repeat that, or maybe even take another step forward. Giolito, complete wild card. I would say Cutter Crawford. I don't know what another year in the AL East is going to do for him, whether he'll maintain what he did last year, regress, step forward. I have no idea, but my expectations aren't high. And I'm hoping for the best with Bayo. I think he can only go up. It's just how much at a time will he go up? So I guess what I'm getting at here is we're not a big market team, or we don't have a big market rotation yet. You unequivocally have to make one more move.
Terry, are you okay? Well, we don't trust Breslow, so I think my question is going to be it's not going to be a great one. But are you okay going with this five into the regular season with the expectation that if we are competitive, that we can improve it in August?
Well, we haven't done that type of a trade for a starting pitcher in a while. So I wouldn't be comfortable with it if I'm being completely honest. And Corbin Burns is out there. I'm not saying that has to be the move, because there are other guys. There's Manaea, there's Buehler. You can still make a trade. There were a lot of rumors for Luis Castillo to be acquired, and I wouldn't be a huge fan of that, but it would be significant, and I would ultimately be okay with it. But you got a million different avenues to accomplish this. So if they manage to not accomplish it, I'm going to be a little aggravated, because at this point, if someone goes down, it's Richard Fitz or Quinn Priester, and that scares me.
Obviously, it's better than going into last year. Like, Garrett Crochet is a huge upgrade. I love him at the top, but I'm not comfortable. Like, I don't think we can win the AL East right now without another pitching acquisition. Like you said, obviously, someone's going to go down throughout the year. And Quinn Priester is probably going to have to make 15 starts, 10 starts. Cooper Criswell is going to be making starts. Dick Fitz is going to be making starts. So I want another guy that those guys won't be having to make 10, 15 starts this season. I want those guys to maybe get one or two starts this year. Like, I don't want those guys to have to make even be a factor this season. So I would love to have one more. I'm more comfortable in this team than I was last year's team going into the season, though. That's the answer to the question.
I'm a little little bit more comfortable, but I'm skeptical still.
So I agree with you, Nick. We're better off right now than we were a year ago. But my issue goes down to Breslow. If we had Theo Epstein at the helm, I would trust that he was going to do what's best for the program at the trade deadline. And if that were the case, I'd be comfortable with this going in. But because we have Breslow, it has to be better now, because I have zero faith at the deadline that he's going to make a meaningful move. Zero.
If Lucas Giolito, if you could tell me right now that A, he's going to be healthy coming off of the bracing procedure, not full Tommy John, but the bracing procedure, which isn't really that proven yet, and he's going to revert back to 2021, at that point, okay, I'm feeling pretty good, because you got Crochet, you've got a top of the rotation guy in Giolito, you got Hauk, you got Bayo, and if Crawford's still here, then so be it. I mean, it's never going to be a terrible thing that he's your five starter, but we'll see. Let's get over to Burns real quick. I just want to share some observations. I don't think the Red Sox are going to get him, but his market is not robust. We're not looking at seven teams in on him right now. We're looking at the Giants, the Blue Jays, the Red Sox, until they tell us they're not in on him or they pivot. We have to assume that they're at least keeping close tabs on it. I just don't know that he's going to get the money they initially thought. And he is the top free agent pitcher on the market. And typically, if they're not signed by the end of the winter meetings, their agent doesn't have the advantage anymore. The advantage goes to the GMs and the team owners, because now, they have the leverage. So I'm just wondering if the price comes down, maybe we can make a play on him. And here's the scary thing, though. Like I said, I'm not expecting we're going to get him. But the big scary to me is if the Blue Jays finally pull the plug and they're like, okay, we're not getting him either, I'm worried that the Blue Jays could swoop in and take our next best option. So I just want to see some resolution to this before, you know, we have a very limited amount of options.
I like the player. You know, he's thrown 167 plus innings each of the last 4 years, 167 and 21, 202, 193, 194. He had a sub three ERA last year in Baltimore. I mean, I have zero faith they're going to spend the money that it's going to take. And the reason why I believe that is I don't think they're going to put the years in the contract that are going to get him now. Like when you go for a player like this, you have to assume the last year or two are not going to be as productive as the money is. You're paying for the first 4 or 5 years, and they just aren't comfortable with that. They're just not. So I don't. Now, if they can get him for 5 years, I'd overpay for those 5 years, but that's just me. John Henry's cheap, and I think that played out in the Max Fried going, which forced their hand on the Crochet trade.
Well, we eviscerated them for the Max Fried deal, but it turned out they weren't really that far off. It was just 1 year off, basically.
They're always not that far off. They're pretty good coming in second and third place intentionally, Terry, and you know it.
Well, they are, but the official offer that was reported was 6 years, $190 million, I think, or 7 years, was it, rather.
Was that the same official offer they made to Johnny Damon after he signed with New York?
It's what Sean McAdam reported. That's all I can say. So what I'm getting at here is, I mean, I would do a 7 year deal on Burns at,
I would too.
Yeah. At $34 million or less, let's say annually.
I would too, but Corbin Burns won it. He's looking for 8-9. If Max Fried got 8, Corbin Burns is going to get 8.
He'll get 8. Yeah. No, I'm you're right. And I would probably do 8 as well. He's a year younger than Fried as well. So,
and he might even be looking for 9, but I don't think anyone's going 9.
I just don't think he has the market to really get exactly what he wants. And
I'm scared that it's the Mets that hop in there and scoop him up and just say, we're not done.
They could.
If he's left on the market, like you said, like if he's left in the market until March, then if it's $225 million at this point, they're like, all right, let's just do it. I mean, it's way less than Lindor makes. Like, they have unlimited money at this point.
Yeah. I think he's just hoping the Giants step up. But the Giants said earlier in the winter they're not going to spend a ton, and they already gave Willy Adames 180 or so. So Buster Posey needs to convince the ownership group out there that it's something they need to do. And if he can, it probably happens. If not, do you think Burns would want Toronto or Boston?
I don't think anybody wants Toronto.
Exactly.
It's been a problem for them in forever. I don't think anyone wants to go to Toronto. If they go to Toronto, it's their last option. Unless they blow them out of the water, like it's 50, 75 million more. Like, nobody's going to choose to go to Toronto if they don't have to.
Yeah, but the problem is how sure are we that people want to come to Boston? I mean, we have finished.
We're not. But those were the options. I think they want to go to Boston and over Toronto.
That's fair.
If you could, we're jumping ahead now, but if you did get an Alex Bregman or a Nolan Arenado, I prefer Arenado, I think that would help. I think if Nolan Arenado is on your roster, that's some star power. It's an MVP name. It's a team leader type guy. I think that would help a lot if they would address that before the starting pitching thing.
How much do we think Burns cares about winning?
It's a good question.
Because a lot of these guys, and I hate to say it, but it comes down to money, and if winning's even a factor, it's down the list. And I haven't heard how much of a factor that is for this particular player. And also, does he even perceive Bregman or, you know, just Arenado as a good move? Like, is that a true commitment to winning? You know, I don't know. Maybe more so with Bregman just because he's younger.
It's a fair question that you're proposing here, but you just look at this roster and it doesn't quite have the star power. Yeah, maybe it would be fun to have Jaren Duran playing in left field behind you, but I mean, you're surrounded by terrible defenders. So I think an Arenado or Bregman guy helps a little. You know, it gives the team a little bit of star power, a winning pedigree, and I don't know. I mean, it hasn't been a sexy destination for quite a while.
I kind of agree with Terry here. With if you told Corbin Burns, Alex Bregman, or Nolan Arenado is going to play third base for this team next year, and not Rafael Devers, and Rafael Devers is still going to be like your DH, I think he would be like, yeah, that makes more sense. I don't think it's going to change where he signs, but I think it would make him happier. I don't think it's a negative.
Yeah, and when Eduardo Rodriguez left here for the Tigers, he took shots at our bad defense, and he said it's going to be nice to have some good defenders behind me. And I think he kind of had a beef with Cora too, so that was probably a bit of a motivator, but we have to break from that. And just imagine when the outfield becomes Duran, Rafaela, and Anthony, how good that outfield's going to be defensively. And I think you're one infielder away. I don't know a ton about Christian Campbell. I know he's a good power hitter, and you know, he's got a really high ceiling. I don't know how he is defensively. I'm assuming he's okay, but if he is, I mean, Trevor Story, I know we don't like his bat, but he plays good defense. And Arenado on either corner helps you. Obviously, he would help you more at third than first. But suddenly, you're looking okay at that point. You're not going to be the worst team in the league.
I think what you just can't have three terrible defenders in the infield at once. Like, Devers is bad. Casas is bad. If you're going to be bad, I mean, Grissom's bad too. You can't have him there every day. David Hamilton was fine, but not great at second base. I mean, you need one more good defender. I would just love to move Devers to the DH spot and go get your third baseman. I don't really have a preference between Bregman and Nolan Arenado, honestly. I mean, I think I'd rather have Arenado because it's a shorter deal, but then you have to give up something for him. And Bregman, you just had to sign him. But I think, I don't know. I think Arenado slightly would over Bregman at this moment. But I do think bringing in a big name like Nolan Arenado, who's top three in MVP multiple times in his career, I do think that helps other free agents. And I think it would help this team going forward. So I think it should. I don't know if it I would say it should happen, but I wouldn't be mad if it happened at all.
And apparently
it's an upgrade for sure.
Yeah, on day one, he's the team captain. You know, Devers doesn't want it. I think Duran is kind of, you know, he's moving into the veteran stage of his career, and I think he'll be a leader on the team, not necessarily the leader, but I forget who it was. It was a number of years ago, but I just happened to be watching a game. I think it was on MLB Network, and it was a Rockies game. And something happened where Arenado didn't like his teammate dogging something. And Arenado went right up into his face and was essentially like, clean it up. And I'm like, I respect that. We don't have that guy. And, you know, and you don't always have to be that type of a leader, but I just feel like his presence is going to elevate everybody. And I think he could have that sneaky good MVP caliber year in Boston. So to be the team that reaps the rewards of that contract he signed with only 3 years remaining, I'm all in on him if we can get it done.
That last part is what makes him more reasonable to expect than Bregman. like for the, all the same reasons I've already said. They're just shorter dollars. And look, good teams have more than one leader. There's leadership across the roster that hold each other mutually accountable. So by switching some of the prospects for veterans, you're going to get that naturally, you would hope, if you've identified good characters. So, I mean, when you have, I almost swore, immaturity at first base with Casas, like you said, Terry, and you're dead on accurate. Devers doesn't want it. I mean, I think that Ref Snyder, who was the fourth outfielder, was identified midseason as the leadership from the clubhouse. Like, that's a problem. That's a significant problem. So, you know, they've got to address that. That's what I, when I'm talking about a balanced roster, you can have an infusion of youth, and every team that's competitive does. But balance means veterans. You've identified who are going to be the leaders. It's not just one guy. There is going to be an alpha dog, right? But then there's other leaders. That's how teams work. It's how successful teams work. So when you're talking about building a roster and it's out in the bullpen, it's in the starting rotation, it's in the everyday guys, you know, it's got to be an important factor. And the more we talk about it, the more I like Arenado at third, because that means Casas is not at first. And as long as you have the buy-in from Devers, I think that creates some additional flexibility to go out and get that right-handed bat.
You mentioned Casas. Let's get into him. I can't go into next season with either Casas or Yoshida on the roster. Now, Casas is the more easily movable guy, and I know Seattle didn't like him because he didn't profile well in that ballpark, but there's a million different things you can do with Casas to make your team better. So just figure it out with him. And if it doesn't happen, and right now, I mean, it looks less likely, but hopefully Casas is sitting at home and he's seeing all these rumors. Apparently he's blocked Jason on Twitter, by the way, if I'm not mistaken. I can double check that. But so he's seeing, you know, like we are, all the trade rumors. Hopefully he's sitting there thinking to himself, why doesn't my own team want me? Why didn't the Mariners want me? Why am I unwanted? And I hope that helps bring the level of self-awareness to him that he has not had. And
zero chance.
Well, hopefully it does, but you're probably right. So that's the type of Tristan Casas that I want on this team. One that is self-aware, one that ends the circus act that he gets associated with at times, and just locks in and, you know, does the things we all thought he would do since we drafted him. But I think he's your odd man out, whether you trade for that pitcher. We haven't spent any money, by the way. We didn't hone in on that directly, but it's nice to see the Crochet deal happen, but we haven't spent money. That's not a box that's been checked off yet. Like, we're still living in the past in that aspect of things until we make a move here. So, but I would, yeah, he's your chip. And I think a good GM will know how to move him and how to get something in return. You can get it for a pitcher. You can also do the deal we've been talking about. We're the only podcast that has been like hardcore on this, and that's send him to Toronto for Vladimir Jr. I'd put Abreu in the deal. A lot of people don't want to put both of them in the same deal. I would do it, and I would pay the price. But go ahead,
Jared. I would too, 100%. And the news broke that the Blue Jays offered Vladdy Jr. a contract, and he turned it down, which provides some leverage to Boston or any other team that wants to trade for him. Because you're going to risk what happened to us with Xander Bogaerts, which is you're going to lose a cornerstone player that you developed, partially paid, and then you lose him for absolutely nothing. So I don't think Toronto's is that stupid. I think they're going to have to move him. And today's news benefits the suitors. So strike while the iron's hot. Like, go put an aggressive deal, overpay for him if you have to. Ask permission to speak about an extension, which will be contingent on the trade itself. Because one of the things I'm worried about the Garrett Crochet thing is he's a New York Met in 2027. So these are guys, if you're going to expend the assets, you better sign them. Vlad Jr. is only 25. So if you're willing to do those things, you got some leverage today.
Nick.
I think I saw a report today that Vladimir Guerrero wanted a contract that started with a five. So I think that's where, if you're looking at extension, it's $500 million. I think that's what he was basically saying. And my take on Kostas trading him right now, I just think his value is so low. If we traded him last offseason, I think you could have gotten way more for him coming off a second place in the Rookie of the Year voting after missing 90-something games this year with like some sort of rib injury. And then he came back slow, and I guess there was a lot of reports that the Red Sox weren't happy with that. I just don't think his value is high enough right now, and I don't think anybody wants him. I think a lot of teams see him as a guy that hasn't really put it all together yet, and he might be injury prone. He missed some time in the minors. He missed some time in the majors last year. He didn't really hustle to get back on the field when the Red Sox really needed him or were struggling offensively late. I don't think a lot of teams want him. The Pirates were another team that it looked like maybe a trade could happen, but they already got their first baseman from Toronto. And trading for Vlad, I just don't think they do that until the deadline. I think they run it back one more time and see if they can compete again. If not, they unload him at the deadline, and I think they'll get more for him at the deadline when if he's batting 300 or 25 bombs at the time. You know, I think they do it then. But I would, if he was available, I would do it. You know, I think he'd make this team a World Series kind of team. If you get Vlad in here with Devers and Crochet, I think you would have to extend him too to make it worth it. And, you know, you'd have to do everything if you go in for Vlad, because it was going to cost a lot. It's going to be costs. It might even be Meyer and Willier. I don't know. They're going to ask for everything we got.
Would you guys give Vladimir 500?
Yeah, if you trade for him, you have to.
100%.
Yeah, I wouldn't go much higher than that, but because I mean, he might actually be the same age as Soto now that I think about it, but I just feel like Soto's window is going to be longer than Vladimir. So I don't want to go quite as nuts. I mean, he would be the top guy next year outside of maybe Kyle Tucker, I think is going to be a big fish on the market, but I didn't think Soto would. I thought 600 was a stretch for Soto, and he blew way past that. So I don't want to pay six for Vladimir if it gets to that, I guess is what I'm saying. Go ahead.
Look, if the offer to Soto was real, the Red Sox acknowledge they have the money and they've budgeted it to spend on the big league roster. They better spend a large chunk of that, or I'm going to be pissed off.
They better go put it on Corbin Burns, but that's John Henry's thing. He will only spend it on offense that he thinks will survive the whole contract. He doesn't think a pitcher will ever last its whole contract, so he's not going to do it anymore.
We agree on that, Nick, but you can't offer what they said. The official offer was 700. And I'm not saying they have to spend every penny of it, but they have to go spend a significant chunk of money. Otherwise that Soto offer was illusory. Like, it was offered, but they knew it was going to lose. They never thought it was competitive enough to get the player. So we'll put it out there, but it's not real. If it was real, then go spend the goddamn money. Vlad Jr. is a pretty good consolation because he effectively resolves your first base issue, resolves your Casas personality issue, and he resolves your right-handed power bat issue. Like, he checks some boxes. So if he's at the consolation and it costs $500 million, I would have done it yesterday.
I'll take it a step further than that. I think Vladimir Jr. is a better fit for the Red Sox than Juan Soto. Being that he's a righty, his numbers are off the charts. If you go look at him at Fenway with about a 180-game sample size, that's not massive, but still, he likes Fenway. He's been open about it. It's one of his favorite places to play. You don't hear players saying that about Fenway in recent years, but Vladimir Jr. does. And being a righty bat, he profiles as a great hitter for this ballpark. If they were both free agents at the same time and I had my pick from the mountaintops, I'd be screaming, go get Vladimir instead of Soto. And Soto's numbers might be better overall over the course of his career, but I just love Vladimir at Fenway. I would go 5 to 550 on him. I'm uncomfortable, you know, getting north of that, but that far and away blows out any offer for a first baseman. I think we said Albert Pujols is the highest at 240. So you're more than doubling that. And first basemen typically don't get paid. I mean, Freddie Freeman at 32 years old signed a 5 or 6 year deal at $152 million, for instance. And Freddie would be a guy I'd love to have for the same exact reasons. I would have loved Freddie Freeman in Boston. But and now we're...
I want to have a Trevor Story.
And then we went with Trevor Story, yeah. So,
Jeremy, if they put $200 million into Crochet's extension, do you still feel the same way? Because I would. Like, if that doesn't 100%. Count as spending the money, I want to add another player, you know? 100%. But I think that's what they do, is they extend Crochet with the money.
I think they're going to do it, too. And that's why I think it's less likely we'll go get Burns. I don't think it's going to hit 200, though, for Crochet.
Well, if they do it now and buy out the arbitration years, it's going to be better than what he's going to get awarded in arbitration, but it's not going to be top of the market money. There's some concessions there early.
I think it's going to have to be, he gets an opt out at 30. So you do, what is he, 25 right now? You give him like 7 or 8, and he would want to opt out at 30. Which I don't want to give him. I want to get him until he's like 34 years old and then let him hit free agency then. But I don't know how it's going to work. I don't think that it's going to hit 200 either unless they go like 10 years, which I don't think they'll do.
No, I wouldn't do that for a starting pitcher. But I did give a thing on Twitter here. Let me use a different browser.
Yeah, I kind of agreed with what you said. I think you were about 175-ish.
Yeah,
I don't know how the option thing would work. I don't know if he would agree to that contract, but I think the money is pretty correct.
Yeah, so the exact deal, typically I'm pretty good at this. This year, not so much, because the market's just been more insane than any of us really anticipated. But let me go to my deal. So he's got 2 years remaining of arbitration. And this is his, I think it's going to be his age 26 season coming up, if I'm not mistaken. So here's what I do. I'd give him a 5-year deal with two options on, so it could potentially be 7. I'd have the first one at $15 million. That'd be this year. Next year, he would get 20. The next 3 years after that, he would get 25 apiece. So that's $110 million guaranteed. Then I would add two really expensive option years at the end of it to hopefully entice him into doing it for $35 million apiece. That's the going rate for a top of the rotation pitcher. That's what Snell got. That's what DeGrom, Gerrit Cole, all of them have. And with those options on there, you could use those as leverage. So before you get to that first option year, you can renegotiate into maybe a 6 or 7 year deal, you know, for 30 plus a year. But that's where I would start. I think that's a fair starting point. I might end up being way off, but I don't think we're lowballing him at this point. He's only going to make $3 million this year if he agrees to nothing. And he probably wants to make more than that. So I would at least start there and see what happens. But that overall deal could be 180 if both options are picked up. And I don't think we're insulting him with that.
The only thing with that is it's $35 million. That's the going rate right now. But in 5 years, it'll be $45-50 million.
It could be.
So the only thing I would maybe try would go less AAV this year. Because it's at 2.9 right now. If you can get that down to like 6 to 8 and then go 42 AAV in those option years, I don't know if that would entice them more to stay. I don't know. I'm just thinking of things.
Yeah, I don't know. And he wasn't at the top of my list 3 weeks ago. I would have much preferred other options, but once Fried came off the board, a couple other guys came off the board. At that point, you know, Crochet sounded pretty good. So, you know, it was a relief that we did it at the time, but it's so hard to put a value on a guy. Like, we just tried to do it. And how do you put a value on a guy who's only pitched one full season as a starter? It's hard to do. I don't recall us ever being in this situation with a pitcher. Jeremy.
So this is all predicated on what type of player he is. Is he like Rafaela, who wants the lifelong financial freedom? Or is he like Cassis, who's already said he's going to bet on himself through arbitration? Because if he's more like Cassis' personality with regards to betting on himself, no other factor, then he's going to pitch for 2 years in a big market. And his goal is to have two really good years and then go put himself out in the market and get top dollar. If he's has some concern about, you know, hurting his arm and not getting that big deal, then he's going to be willing to sign. And I don't know the answer to that, but I sure hope Breslow and company had those conversations before they pulled the trigger.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping the framework of a deal might have at least been discussed. But going back to last July, he said if he got traded, the only way he would pitch for them in the postseason is if they gave him an extension. So that tells me he is open to it. And it's essentially the same situation right now. I mean, the extension wouldn't have kicked in until this coming season anyway. So we're still kind of in that territory with him. So that tells me he's probably open, but I don't know. And I think the deal I laid out that could potentially reach 180, that to me should hopefully sound pretty good to a guy who has had one Tommy John already and could have it again. And he's a velocity guy. And those are the guys that have the Tommy John. You know, over 50% of his pitches are four seam fastballs. And then he throws a cutter, which typically is in the low 90s, which, you know, isn't, you know, there's some velo there. So, you know, we'll see, but it's a dicey situation, and it's going to be the elephant in the room in spring training if it hasn't happened yet. You know, so hopefully they get it done.
I think it gets done in spring training. I think
it could.
They need to. I think the reason why it doesn't happen right now is they need to see how close they get to the luxury tax if they're planning on spending a lot of their money, which I don't know. At this point, it doesn't look like it, but if it does, they don't want to go over the luxury tax and right now and up his A. You know, they could do different things with the contract this season if they sign someone else. You know, maybe they can give him 20 mil this year, lower those back end numbers if they have to, if they don't sign as many players. But if they do sign Bregman, maybe they want to keep that AAV this year lower. So I think that's why they would wait until spring training.
Yeah.
But we all want it done now.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully, you know, it won't be like the final hours before opening day. We've seen that happen before. Bogarts was one in 2019. And I know we've done it more recently than that with other players, but we'll see. But if Buehler and Manaea come off the board this week and we're not one of the teams, my anxiety is up at that point. I'm like, oh my God, what are we going to do? You know, you could still trade Casas, like I said, and get that player. You know, if he's not going to Toronto, but yeah, I guess where are we at with time? We might just wrap it on this. Yeah, we'll probably wrap in a minute. But what does a trade package look like for Vladimir? Let's circle back to that real quick because I wanted to get into it. I've got Casas and Abreu both in it. Assuming we're still going to get a starter some way or another, I'd put Crawford in the deal. They're about to lose Gausman and Bassett at the end of this season. So I think a guy like Crawford does have a little bit of value there, you know, because he's controllable beyond this year. And then you have to put a prospect in there. And I was just looking at the top 30. And honestly, I'm not good with this. You got a couple of shortstops in your top five, Franklin Arias, Yoan Cespedes. I think Cespedes is the more highly touted guy, but maybe that's too much of a trade package at that point. But Nick, what do you think a package would look like?
Well, you brought up the shortstop thing, and they are losing Bo Bichette also after next year. Okay. So, I think they don't really like Casas either. So I think it's more like Marcelo Meyer, Willie Abreu, and other things, maybe. Maybe Cutter Crawford. I think Cutter Crawford probably does get traded at some point. I'd say like there's like a 60% chance he does. Or I prefer him just moving to the bullpen, and that's your bullpen upgrade if you go get your starter. I would be totally fine with that, but I think it starts with Marcelo Meyer and then Willie Abreu, and then they probably will ask for more minor pieces. But I don't think Tristan Casas is their guy, because if they're looking for a full rebuild, if they lose Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero in the same offseason, they probably go full rebuild and want the younger guy, Marcelo Meyer, over the Tristan Casas, who's already been in the league 3 years. Or 2.5.
Well, the thing that makes it attractive to have Casas if you're Toronto is you don't really miss a beat. You've already got a high ceiling first baseman already in place. I think Abreu makes you better. So they can still win in 2025, I'm saying, with Casas and Abreu in there. I'm not saying that they wouldn't still prefer Meyer, but
I think a lot of these GMs or these like newer age guys, they look for value matching. Like they want to match the value that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. will off put or whatever. So I think they value shortstops way higher than they ever will value a left-handed kind of fat first baseman that doesn't play good defense. I know he might be able to hit 35, 40 bombs, but he's not Vladimir Guerrero good. And he never will be. I think just teams value a guy like Marcelo Meyer more. And if they, I don't know. It just depends what they're looking for. If they want to compete in 2025, then maybe. But if they're going to go full rebuild, I think they go for the higher upside, younger, more value-ish guys. I mean, I just know a young shortstop is more valuable to a GM than a somewhat fat first baseman, even if he can't hit bombs.
Jeremy.
Yeah, my biggest concern is we can't just trade our distressed assets to get a top player that we then want to turn around and all agree is worth $500 million. So I agree. You can't keep Casas in the organization if you're bringing in Vlad Jr. That makes absolutely no sense. So he's got to be a part of the deal or some other deal. Willie Abreu to me is trending upward and he's redundant with Roman Anthony coming up. So he makes sense to me too. The Crawford thing, I would think they're going to want Bayo. He's younger. He's under contract. Crawford doesn't have – he is what he is, guys. He's, you know, Nick, you just said you'd prefer him in this organization to be in the bullpen. Like, we only have seven, more likely six starting pitchers that we can count on coming into 2025 throughout the organization. Like, I don't think that's going to get it done. Now, again, the news today changes things. Maybe they're a little bit more desperate, but I think it's going to take a combination of us needing to get rid of Casas, their desire to have somebody like Abreu, a plug-and-play starting pitcher, and then two mid-level assets type of deal. It's going to take that many players to get this type of player. And you better only you if you do it, Breslow, you better have the contract signed 5 seconds after the trade is completed.
I think the framework would be in play. You don't give up that much talent without major assurities that a deal will get done.
I would hope it's announced at the same time. That does happen and can happen. And if Breslow is going to put that many assets into the deal, he better have it happen that way.
And
yeah, if you give up Marcelo Meyer, Tristan Casas, and Willy Abreu for 1 year of a guy, and he doesn't resign, you should be fired.
Yeah. And publicly flogged. So I'm confident it would happen. It seems like the Guerrero camp will have the conversations with you because they've happened in Toronto. So I think Boston could get it done, and that's what turns the narrative. That flips the narrative. That brings you back. You know, it's 2004 again if you make that deal. Like, that's the type of enthusiasm you have in your fan base, in your ballpark, and it's the commitment from ownership that Red Sox fans have desperately wanted to see now for coming up on a decade.
I'd be all the way back. I'd be all the way back instantaneously. If that happens, right away. I would be all the way back. They obviously have some other things they need to do. Because if they do put a starting pitcher into the deal, they have to go get a starting pitcher. So you think that if that happens, dominoes are going to happen really fast. But I'd be all the way back.
I'm still assuming they will. And the easiest thing, this is what I would do. I would pivot right now away from Burns, and I'd give Walker Buehler the Eovaldi deal, 3 years, $75 million, and I would give him an opt-out after every single year if it gets it done, because you need 2025 to be your get-right year with your fan base, with your organization, and I'm good with what would essentially be a one-year deal for Buehler, and let's go. Let's go.
I mean, you're not going to go get Vlad and pull half measures. If you're in, you got to go all the way in, because then you're just spending the money and you're not a contender. So if they go be that aggressive, I would expect them to continue to build the roster through spring training and be ready at the trade deadline to add.
Absolutely. And quite frankly, I mean, I don't know that you would have to make a big splash at the deadline unless it's for pitching, because I'm positive either Meyer or Campbell are going to come up. One of those two will be a force in the second half. So,
and you don't need to, Terry, you don't need to make a big splash. You just, right, at the time, and we don't know what the need's going to be, right? Pitcher goes down, you lose Story again, the need's going to shift. But whatever the need is, you trust that they're going to go out and fill it with a meaningful option.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't see why they wouldn't. And, you know, I'm more comfortable with the Fitz and Priester depth thing. Like, don't tell me their depth if we have a shaky rotation. But if we have a solid rotation, I'm more than comfortable with one of those two coming up and seeing where it goes. Fitz pitched very well in...
He did.
In three or four starts. I think he only gave up runs in one game, and it might have just been one run, if I remember right. But I'm good with it. All right, so I guess we're going to wrap on that. We'll be back Tuesday. If there are no developments, we will do the next group of 10 on the MLB trade rumors list. We only have two of those shows left. Some of the names have come off the board, but we can still get into them and... you know, what we expect with their new team, what could have happened, you know, had we been the team, and so on and so forth. So we'll be back in a couple days. Hopefully it's to cover a development though, and we'll push that show back. But either way, have a great start to your work week. Take care.